The malls are crowded even at midnight. Wallets are open, a sure sign the holidays are here again. Wall Street is watching to see which stores are naughty and which toys are especially nice. So far, signs point to a healthy season of holiday shopping, with one very big box exception, which may mean a lump of cold if you've invested in the mighty Walmart. As we do each month, we've called on David Gardner for advice, and in December, to tell us how all of this holiday spending is going to play out for your investments. He's co-founder of The Motley Fool, and he joins us from Fool headquarters in Alexandria, Virginia. David, nice to talk to you again.
Happy holidays, Neil.
Thank you. Before we start, our usual caveat, neither David nor I will offer advice on whether to buy or sell any particular stock. But if you have questions about the way the markets work, current trends, philosophies of investment, give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And David, signs look good for the initial burst of holiday shopping anyway.
And I think, you know, Neil, just like has been the case the last few years, e-commerce is a real savior, I think. You know, some of the – if you actually pull and see how some of the stores are doing, you'll hear flattish or maybe down 1%. And that was sort of the story at Walmart, which is, of course, such a huge store. It does have a good e-commerce operation. That's up 60% for Walmart. But still, for the most part, that's a company focused, of course, on so-called bricks and mortar. But when you think about eBay, Amazon.com, these are already places I've been loading up on gifts this year. I'm the lazy guy who likes to click my computer mouse around the internet and send stuff to friends. But I think that remains a major trend that we have to recognize.
And what about toy makers? Particularly, we just saw two big openings, unveilings of game systems.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I'm a video gamer myself, so I think it's pretty much a no-brainer to predict that it's a big time for a company like GameStop, let's say, which is the number one video game-focused retailer in America today. But, of course, there's also a lot of benefit to stores like Target and Best Buy. But if you actually look at the toy makers themselves, they're sort of interesting. Take Hasbro today, which, you know, Star Wars, Monopoly, G.I. Joe, so many of those brands. In fact, as I think about it, Neil, you know, seems like there's a monopoly everything, isn't there? There's a Star Wars monopoly, of course. But I think what I want to know, and I think a lot of the American people want to know this as well, is could there ever be a monopoly-themed Star Wars?
Really?
And if there were, what would that look like?
I don't know. I mean, you'd have to go around and evaluate all of the properties, and what would be Mediterranean Avenue? I have no idea. I'm thinking
Luke Skywalker banging lightsabers with that guy on the community chess cards. But, you know, as I think about, you know, Hasbro has these brands.
Tatooine seemed like a pretty lousy world. That could be Mediterranean Avenue.
I knew you could go Star Wars geek speak with me. But, you know, that's a company that over the last 4 years or so, the stock's up about 80%. The stock market is up about 60%. When we talk about the Hasbros and Mattels of this world, that is sort of the stock market returns I think you can expect from them going forward. That is, they will exceed the market because they're relevant companies, well-managed for the most part, but they're not going to be spectacular stocks because it's pretty mature business.
And how do you gauge how a company like that is doing?
Well, from my standpoint, I just look at the numbers. I mean, I look at the top line, the sales, and then the bottom line, take out all the costs, and what do the profits look like, and then comparing them against the year before or the trends over the last 5 years. I think a lot of us would be well-served as investors to look at two things, really. I know it's not good to look backwards too much, but often with big, mature companies, look at the last 5 or 10 years if you can take a look at a stock graph online and just see how that company has done versus the market average. A lot of us lack that context, but I've done pretty well as an investor by believing that past performance is actually a pretty good indicator of future results. There's not one-to-one correlation, but for the most part in this world, the winners keep on winning, assuming it's the same managers, the same brands, and that's very true of the toy industry.
David Gardner is with us, a co-founder of The Motley Fool. He's with us from Fool headquarters in Alexandria, Virginia. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email question we have from Chris in Cleveland. For Christmas, my sister would like to buy some stocks for my 11-month-old son to go into a college fund for him. She's asked my husband and me to set up an account for him. I'm coming upon terms like custodian, guardian, traditional IRA, educational IRA. Where do I start? What do I need to know?
Well, I'll just talk about what was done for me, because it was a wonderful thing in my life. When I was born, I wasn't aware of it. I was zero, but my parents set up a gift trust account for me. Basically, it was in my name, and it was my ownership, but they decided the age at which I would get it. And it's something that it doesn't have to end up being $1 million, or might only end up being $5,000, but anything that you can get saved and add to over the course of the 18 or 21 or 25 years that you want to do for your child is just tremendous. And at least in my parents' case, it wasn't just that they were investing money for me through that account. where, again, they were the trustees, but I was the actual owner, which is a very common way to do this. But it was that they were teaching me along the way. So they were interesting me in things like Hasbro and Mattel and whether there ever will be a Monopoly-themed Star Wars. And so, you know, it makes it real for you as a child and then a teenager, and you start to realize that the stock market isn't really that much different from the farmer's market. It's just that rather than buying fruit and vegetables, you're buying part ownership in American companies or foreign multinationals. You're looking for great businesses. And so I think half of what you can do for your child is not actually setting up the account. It's actually teaching.
Well, I would have sunk all my money into Mr. Machine and taken a bath. Anyway, let's get John on the line. John's calling us from Minneapolis.
Indeed. Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I was doing some Christmas shopping the other day for a friend that lives in the EU zone, and suddenly found myself not having quite as much money to spend as I thought because of the recent weakness in the dollar. I'm wondering about your investment philosophy as it comes to hedging against a declining dollar and where you see the market going in that respect.
It's a great question, John. And from my standpoint, I tend to have about maybe 30% of my money invested either in foreign companies, just as stocks. For example, BMW is traded in Germany, but you can be a part owner of BMW because it's also on the pink sheets here in the U.S., and that's a stock that I like, for example. But there are many of those great companies outside the U.S., brands that we know, just, you know, the Peter Lynch idea that buy what you know, which has been so successful for me as an investor. I think that we can do that with these foreign companies, and it's easier than ever before, and the New York Stock Exchange is getting prepared to merge with Euronext, and it's going to be possible with just a single ticker symbol now to be buying some companies over in Europe, just a click of the mouse. So I think it's all coming together, but I would suggest to you that about 30% exposure is appropriate, and that can take one of two forms. You can buy foreign stocks outright, or remember that when you buy a company like Coca-Cola, the majority of Coke's business is actually outside the U.S., and so a lot of large American companies, Dell and others, actually I can't say off the top of my head what the mix is for Dell, but these are companies that operate globally, and so you're actually getting a lot of exposure outside of the dollar if you're worried about our currency.
Hmm. All right. Well, thanks for the thoughts, guys.
Good luck, John.
Bye.
Email question from Heather in Anchorage. I'm 63, retired, and have an adequate retirement income. Most of my assets are in IRAs. I've heard a rule that it's your age should define your asset allocation, e.g., at 65, I should have 65% of my assets in bonds and 35% in equities. I defy the rule. 90% of my assets are in equities. Am I nuts, she asks.
I don't think you're nuts. I mean, the old rule of thumb is take your age, subtract it from 100, and that's the percentage that you should have in stocks. So if you're 90 years old, only have 10% in stocks, and if you're 10 years old, you should have 90% in stocks. And the reason for that rule of thumb, Neil, is that generally the stock market's going to outperform other things, but with more risk. If you have time on your side, there's very little risk. Stock market is almost always a great bet over a 20-year period. But if you're 75 years old, that's not as important a bet for you to make. So for the most part, the younger you are, yes, the more stocks you want to have. But you know what? 65 is pretty sounding increasingly young to me these days. And the truth is, you're going to live 40 years more. Plan for that. So I think absolutely you should be subtracting your age from 120 these days. Let's update that rule of thumb for 2006.
And David, next time we talk with you, next month in the new year, we're going to start with a new portfolio of investments. It's going to be a fantasy portfolio, of course, with imaginary money. I'll be picking the stocks with a little guidance from you and from listeners. Now, since I'm a beginner at this, keep in mind, this is all just for fun, a chance to track how the markets are doing and to see what it takes to get started with a small portfolio. Not meant to be advice, not a recommendation for or against any investment. We could talk more about those details in January, but until then, I need some help. So if you have any advice on what's hot in the market right now, how to kickstart a portfolio, email them now, talk@npr.org. talk@npr.org, and then join us again in January when David Gardner and the Motley Fool return. David, thanks very much. Happy holidays.
Thank you. You too, Neil.
Happy New Year. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Cownan in Washington.